Hello, and welcome again to Finding Truth Matters with Dr. Andrew Corbett. We're pleased to have you tune in.
There's no one in the universe who knows more about you, and despite that, he still loves you. There's no one who loves you more than Jesus. Why would you not want to know him?
You may have seen bracelets, name tags and other items with the distinctive lettering WWJD. It stands for What Would Jesus Do? And it's a question we need to ask ourselves as we do life. The answer may not be black and white from Scripture for every specific situation, but Jesus is transparent in his principles and his behaviour. People are not one with destruction or rudeness. He's more of a loving but honest and truthful kind of guy. Listen up tonight for some great insights from Dr. Corbett. What would Jesus do?
You've all seen these letters, right? WWJD. What does it stand for? What would Jesus do? That's right. What would Jesus do? It's a great question, isn't it? A great question to ponder. What would Jesus do? You're faced with a difficult situation. You ask the question, what would Jesus do? Now, we see this on little dog tags. We see this on little wristbands. What would Jesus do? I'm actually going to suggest a better question. Rather than what would Jesus do, here's a better question. Anyone guess what this one is? What did Jesus do? What did he do? Or what does he do? Well, let's go. We can be absolutely certain about what he did do. Here's my next question. Wouldn't it be great to have Jesus right there as your shepherd, your pastor, and go, Jesus, I've got this question, and it's not like he's going to answer in a vague dream. He's not going to answer in sort of like, what was that, Lord? I kind of missed the third word. What was that? But very clearly just spoke to you. Wouldn't it be awesome? Wouldn't it be awesome to have Jesus as your pastor? Now, before you rush into answering that question, let's just slow down a bit. How many would like to have Jesus as their pastor? Don't answer the question because we want to think about this for a moment. Because there were 12 guys that did. Remember, what did Jesus? There were 12 guys that did have Jesus as their pastor. What concept have we got of Jesus? A concept that he will always be lovely and nice. Is that your concept of Jesus when you read the Gospels? I've discovered that Jesus is good, he's always good, but that doesn't always mean he was nice. In fact, there were times, if I was the Apostle Peter, I would go, Jesus just spoke to me, I'd go, what'd you say that for? That hurt my feelings. That was a bit heavy. There are people watching, do you mind? Can you think of those times when Jesus just turned to the disciples and just went, no, don't talk like that. Whoa. Hang on, Jesus, you're supposed to be meek and mild. You're supposed to be nice. So let's think about this. What did Jesus do? Jesus often spoke directly into situations, in very public situations, that wasn't comfortable. At one point, remember what he called Peter? Get behind me, Satan. Wow, that's a bit offensive. Jesus at one time spoke to the Pharisees representing his cause, and Peter, well-meaning Peter, came up and said, Jesus, I think you need to go and apologize to them. Remember how he said? He said, Jesus, do you realize you offended them? Now, come on, let's go. And that conversation did not go the way Peter thought that conversation was going to go. Jesus was prepared to offend. And I've got to reiterate, if you're hearing me say he wasn't good, you're not getting it. He was good. He was always loving. But sometimes when we ask the question, what would Jesus do? We answer from the perspective of someone who is not the Jesus of the gospel. So, would you like to be pastored directly by Jesus? I guess on a brave day, I would say, bring it on. Bring it on. But on a day when I'm not feeling so holy, I might say, no, I'm happy I'm happy for you just to ordain for my shepherding to be by the means you have put around me, people. So, I want to look at, if you've got your Bibles, go to Luke chapter 9. We're in Luke chapter 9 and we're going to see one of these examples. What did Jesus do? What did Jesus do? Because as a church, I'm sure you want to know what Jesus wants you to do as a church. And we want to do things the way Jesus did. I often hear people say, people with a theological challenge often say, if Jesus was alive today, he wouldn't... Well, Jesus is alive today. But that's, if Jesus was walking today, he would do this, that, or the other. Well, there's only one way we can really answer that question with any authority, and that is to answer this one. What did Jesus do? So we're looking at this verse, Luke chapter 9, and we're going to have a look here. We've got Luke chapter 9, verse 55. But he turned and rebuked them and said... Wow. Do you realise when Paul wrote to Timothy, he said one of the main jobs of a pastor was to rebuke. When Paul wrote to Titus and he told Titus, select elders, look at the things they had to do. One of the chief things they had to do was to know how to rebuke. Now, I think there are ways to rebuke. And there are good ways to do it and bad ways to do it. I kind of get, if I was one of the 12 disciples and Jesus rebuked me, it would kind of hurt, but I think it would do me good. Anyone in that camp? You know, if Jesus says something hard, like, don't think like that, get behind me, that's not the way to think. Yes, that would be a rebuke and it would hurt, but I reckon I'd need to hear it. And I think that's the spirit in which we today are meant to shepherd one another as well. Jesus is the ultimate shepherd, and I think we're meant to know how to rebuke certain things so that it does us good. So Jesus could do it in a way that, interestingly, of the 12 disciples, here he's rebuking two of them, James and John, who in Mark chapter 3, verse 17, I think it is, these two guys were always coming up with these outrageously violent plans to spread Christianity. And Jesus was continually going, what? And at one point, he called them the sons of thunder. In other words, they were just hotheads who wanted to blow people up and just be violent in promoting his cause. And he called the Aramaic is Boanerges, sons of Boanerges, or Boanerges, sons of thunder. So here in question, the two people being rebuked right now are James and John. And you see, I've put it in red letters so you can see it a little bit more clearly. Notice what Jesus says. Here's the rebuke. You do not know what manner of spirit you are of. So when we look at the context of this, what was it that led Jesus to say this to two of his three main disciples? Well, we come back to verse 51, and it says this. Now, it came to pass, when the time had come for him to be received up, that he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. So Jesus was on a mission, and I'm going to put it to you, Jesus is still on a mission. His mission is to reconcile the world to his Father. He actually thinks that God, the Father, is the source of all satisfaction, the source of all life, the source of all fulfillment, the source of all joy. You cannot get that joy, fulfillment, satisfaction out of a bottle, a needle, a tablet, a thrill. It only comes from knowing Jesus. It only comes from knowing Jesus. He's still on a mission. His mission is to love you. His mission is to take you the way you are. His mission is to take you the way you are, and because he loves you, he will not leave you the way you are. That's his mission, and he's still on it. So he sets his face resolutely with this mission. We read on, and he sent messengers before his face, and as they went, they entered a village of the Samaritans to prepare for him. Now, you know, if you know anything about gospel background, you know that the Samaritans and the Jews did not see eye to eye. You know, the Samaritans were a mixed race. They embedded some pagan worship into their supposed worship of the Jewish God, and the Jews recognized that straight away and said, that's not the real deal. And there was this hatred between them. And so Jews would walk around Samaria and so on. So you know that. So Jesus wants to go to Samaria. This is a big deal. Jesus is prepared to go into enemy territory and do some business. And his business is saving lives. Next verse. But they did not receive him. How could you not receive Jesus? How could you not receive Jesus? He's altogether lovely. There is no one on the planet, there's no one in the universe who knows more about you, and despite that, he still loves you. There's no one who loves you more than Jesus. Why would you not want to know him? I don't get it. Here is Jesus physically walking into Samaria, and they go, no, get out. You're not coming into our city. What? What? Now, I want to ask the question, who was more offended by that rejection? Jesus or his disciples? And it says here, because they did not receive him because his face was set for the journey to Jerusalem. You associate with Jews? Out. Not in, no. I don't want anything to do. I'll reject Jesus because he associates with Christians. We hear that. We hear that all the time. And who's offended by that? Well, hopefully every Christian's a little bit offended by that. And they were. And this is what they said. And when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, just as Elijah did? Now, personally, right here, if I was Jesus, I'd go for it. All right, this would look cool. I'll just stand back and watch this. This is awesome. Offend me. I'll show you offend me. You should be right now falling to your knees going, thank God Andrew wasn't Jesus. Because there'd be a lot of smouldering ash heaps around today if I had that kind of power. There's a few people I'd like to smite on my less sanctified days. Come on, who's in the smiting club with me? Who likes big theological words? No one. Oh, bother. One person. Well, for the sake of one person, the expression in the Bible when you want to wish smites on your enemy is called being imprecatory. Yeah, she got it. Imprecatory. You read it in the Psalms all the time. They're called imprecatory prayers. You read it in the Bible where take their children, Psalm 137, and dash their heads against the rocks. That's in the Bible. Yeah, that's in the Bible. Did God inspire that? Well, no, God didn't inspire the sentiment. God inspired the writer to express their true feelings of deep disappointment. That's why we should read the Psalms and go, I feel like that some days. And God goes, I know. I know. Does it mean he's going, come on, all right, I'm just going to give you one chance at smiting and then make it a good one. He doesn't do that, does he? I mean, there are things in the Bible that are pretty ugly and they're recorded. And people say, why would God authorize that? God didn't authorize that. God just recorded it. You've got some pretty heavy stuff happening where the Israelites go in and kill and do all kinds of things to people. And people go, how could a good loving God do that? Well, probably a good loving God didn't authorize that, but he's recorded it in a good loving record of it. We need to know the difference between a description and a prescription. A description records what happened, a prescription tells you what should happen. I don't know why you're not all writing that down. That's awesome. I'm going to take notes on myself in a minute. That was great. So here we have James and John calling fire down from heaven. You know the response. What are they thinking when they say, just as Elijah did? And what's he thinking? Well, if we were to cast your mind back into 1 Kings chapter 18, 24, this was the challenge that Elijah gave initially when he started his fire from heaven ministry. You shall call upon the name of your God. This is to the prophets of Baal, 400, 50 prophets of Baal, and I'll call on the name of the Lord. Notice that capitals, L-O-R-D. That's because the translators go, it's the unspeakable name of God. We don't know how to put it into English. We're not even going to write it in English. We're going to fully capitalize it, and you just call it Lord because we don't know what to do with it, but you know who we're talking about. And the God who answers by fire, he is God. And all the people answered, that's really good idea. It's well spoken. Good idea. Let's do it. And of course, you know the story. They were there all day, the prophets of Baal, crying out to Baal, cutting themselves. Oh, Baal, look, we've cut ourselves. You've got to come through. And I'll tell you what, pagan spirituality works very much on the principle of a genie in the bottle. You know how a genie in the bottle works? You rub it and it comes out. And I've heard people treat God like that. And the way they rub the bottle is, I just sense if we just sing this song for another 47 times, then the Holy Spirit will come. And genie in the bottle theology, if we do this, if we cut ourselves like Baal's prophets, then God must come. If we do this, God will do this. If we do this, God must do this. That is not biblical Christianity. That is witchcraft. And I've heard people baptized in Pentecostal language. You remember what happened? Fire didn't come down. And so Elijah, I love this bit. Elijah, right near the end of the day, the sun's coming down, which is really cool because when fire comes from heaven, it looks so much better at dusk. And there's, you read, I love the new way the Living Bible renders it. There's Elijah going around and they're cutting themselves and they're crying out and they're carrying on. And Elijah goes, so where's your God? Where is he? Maybe he can't hear you. Just a bit louder. And then right near the end, he says this, where's your God? He's not answering you. Oh, I know, says Elijah. This is actually in the text. Maybe he's on the toilet and he can't hear you. Now, you think I'm kidding. That is actually in the text. Mate, it's, you know, the old King James. The old King James puts it this way. Maybe he hast relieveth himself. You know, it's whatever, he's still on the toilet, wherever you render it, and he's having a go at him. And then we've got this contrast between pagan spirituality, which says, if I do this, God must do this. And I hear Christians talk like that. I went to church every Sunday. I tithed. I even put in a little missions offering once. And I did not expect this bad thing to happen to me. God, that is not how we do business, you and I. No, no, no. That's not Christianity. That's bad acting, and that is pagan spirituality. So, we see Elijah do this really interesting thing. And Jesus did it when he came to the tomb of Lazarus. Did the same thing. Just stood back and said, I thank you that you hear me. You know what to do. Just actually, before we go, just pour some water on it just so you don't think I'm tricking you. A couple of megalitres, that'll do. Do it again. He did it about, three times. Just drenched this thing and made sure the whole thing was filled with water. Okay, God, you take over. That's really good spirituality. God, you take over. You take over. And so now we come back to our key text. You don't know what manner of spirit you are. And we're back in Luke 9. And Jesus tells them his spirit, his heart. This is his heart. For the Son of Man did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And they went to another village. And some people have this idea that if they come to Jesus, he's going to rebuke them and he's going to tell them to change their life. And I'm thrilled that that's what they think, because that is exactly what he will do. He will. He will rebuke you. But when you've been rebuked by Jesus, it feels like medicine. It doesn't feel like a wound. There is a difference between hurt and harmed. And I've got to tell you, as a pastor, I'm pretty much sick of hearing people say about church, I went to that church, but they hurt me. You're supposed to get hurt in church because you're supposed to be in a church to grow. Now, I know that there are people who are really sensitive at the moment, and what I've just said probably has really offended you. But please understand, if you go into a surgery, you've been hit by a car, you got bits of bone hanging off you, and the doctor's got to look at you and he says to you, "I'm sorry, what I'm about to do to you is going to hurt." And why is he saying that? Because it's for your good. And when Jesus says, "I want you to lay that down in your life, I don't want you to talk like that to people, those emotional responses you have to people who hurt you, I want you to lay those down." What would Jesus do? How many of us are prepared to hear what he would say to us as a church? "Jesus, what do you want me to do?" So, let me make this point. The cause of Christ, and you may think I've been rude, and I apologise for that. I'm not trying to be rude. I'm actually trying desperately to be funny, but it's not coming across that real well. The cause of Christ is not advanced by hatred or rudeness. Now, here's the question. The Samaritans, when Jesus came to them, they rejected him. They rejected him. You may have done that too. Some of the old holiness preachers of the late 19th century, they put it this way. Today's the only chance you're going to get to give your life to Christ. You walk out of here and you don't give your life to Christ, you are rejecting him for eternity. I'll tell you what, I think that is dumb. That's a dumb way to preach the gospel. The average person who receives Christ will have heard about Christ and the gospel 7 times before they receive. 6 times... First time, doesn't make any sense. Second time, heard that somewhere before. Third time, You get to about the 5th time and all of a sudden they've got 3 or 4 stones in their shoes. And every time they walk, it's like, "Man, I don't think I should be living this way. Ow. Hang on. Someone said they know how to get rid of these stones. His name is Jesus. He wants me not to keep walking like this and hurting myself. He wants me to take my shoes off. And he wants to give me a new pair of shoes. I think I'm going to need that." So, 7 times to hear the gospel. If you have heard it several times and you have not received Christ, please keep coming back. I could share with you many, many stories where people have come in, not accepted Christ first off, and just kept coming. And if today I haven't moved you to give your life to Christ, come back next week and come back the week after. So you may not, or you may have in times past, not welcomed Christ's intrusion in your life. The Samaritans, they didn't welcome it. But, you know, that wasn't Christ's only interaction with Samaria. Remember the Samaritan woman? That was a very strategic thing. Remember that woman? Remember where they got talking and she's kind of trying to come across as all religious and spiritual, you know, "Where should we worship, on this mountain or whatever?" And Jesus has said, "Well, hang on, let's talk about who you're living with." Remember what he said? "The one you're living with now is not your husband." He just lets her know he knows. And he makes available to her something he calls living water. Because I tell you now, if you've been in 6 marriages, it's not marriage you're looking for. You're looking for something. It's probably living water. And Jesus was offering that living water. What are you going to do if 2 dozen homosexual activists come and join this church? Because I hope the answer is love them. And I hope the answer is we're going to love them. We're going to love them. So here's the question. The next time you ask Jesus for direction, he may challenge you. He may tell you, "Hey, there's an attitude." How many have got attitudes that need changing? Don't put your hand up. I'll put it up for you. I'm putting both up. Man, I got some attitude. So I got a much better question than WWJD. Here's my much better question. I don't know how it's going to take off as a wristband, but Jesus, what do you want me to do? Isn't that a better question? Not only is this is the really cool bit, it's actually a prayer too. It's really good. Jesus, what do you want me to do? Are we prepared to answer that? as I was putting this together, this is about 4 o'clock this morning, the Lord's speaking to me, and this is my closing thought. So I'm pretty much done after we've shared this, but here it is. It's taken from Colossians 3:12. Here it is. Jesus, what do you want me to do? I reckon he would say, just flick to Colossians 3:12, and there's a couple of verses there. I just want you to work on between now and the grave. Just work on these. Put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness and patience. Now I said that really quickly, but let me just slow down a bit. Compassionate hearts. That answers our question, how would we treat people who are different when they come in? Kindness. Humility. Meekness. Patience. Here's the next verse. Bearing with one another. What does that look like? Ponder that. Because all too often I hear, I went to that church and they hurt me, so I left. Oh, and which part of Colossians 3:13, part A, was that? Bearing with one another. You know what bearing with one another means? It means that you're going to have people in your church family who are a pain. Not you, but probably someone near you. Now, the moment that reality dawns on some people, the moment we can cut the nonsense and get on with real church, that it involves grace and love and compassion, we model it here in the church so that we can show those that are looking for the water of life, not fire from heaven. And if one has a complaint against another, how do you do that in a church? Forgive each other as the Lord has forgiven you. So you must also forgive. I don't say amen to that. I say, ouch. Because I really feel a right to be hurt and offended. But Jesus says, that's not my spirit. I'm not a fire from heaven kind of guy. I'm a water of life kind of guy. And you put this in practice in church, we can answer the question, what would Jesus do? By answering, what did Jesus do? And give you a way to get there. What do you want me to do? Great prayer. Great prayer.
What does Jesus want me to do? It's not always immediately apparent until you open up the New Testament and look at what he did. It's a great place to start. More from Dr. Corbett next week. Podcasts and Finding Truth Matters resources, including tonight's program, What Would Jesus Do?, are available via the website findingtruthmatters.org or by contacting us at Lagana Media. P.O. Box 1143, Lagana, Tasmania 7277. Dr. Corbett is pastor of Lagana Christian Church and president of ICI Theological College Australia. We look forward to joining you again at the same time next week for another Finding Truth Matters.